Welcome to the NCO Journal Sergeant's Time Podcast, a new series featuring informal conversations with leaders at all levels, where you'll have the unique chance to learn what makes them tick, what their leadership styles are, and what inspires them. Joining us is Major General David Doyle, the 4th Infantry Division and Fort Carson Commanding General. He will offer unique insights into how officers collaborate with NCOs, empower their leadership, and foster a culture of excellence within their units. Major General David Doyle received his commission in the infantry from the United States Military Academy at West Point in 1993. He has held many positions from Company Commander of Bravo Company 3rd Ranger Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment, to Commanding General of the 4th Infantry Division in Fort Carson. It's an honor to have you on the show today, sir.
Sergeant Cox, thanks a lot. It's great to be with all of you.
Sir, can you tell us a bit about yourself and what made you join the Army?
My dad was in the Army for 27 years, so I grew up surrounded by the military. He was a signal officer. He was in the 4th Infantry Division in Vietnam. He had experience going to Korea and a bunch of different places. And so he helped me understand what the Army was all about, became part of my life very early on. My grandfather served. My father-in-law served. My brother serves. It's been a family business, so to speak. And the interesting thing is, you know, my dad and my grandpa were commissioned officers, but my father-in-law retired as the Command Master Chief of the Navy. And MCPON,
Master Chief Petty Officer?
That's it. Yeah, that's it. Man, I'm
very good. I pulled that out.
I'm embarrassing myself in the joint realm. But he was the one that always told me, hey, listen to your NCOs, take care of your soldiers, pay attention to those things that your junior enlisted are going through, because they're the ones that get the job done. And if you don't have an appreciation for what they're going through, it's going to be really difficult for you to make informed decisions on missions and their well-being. And so I really I look back on my interactions with him and find it to be formative. So, yeah, that's how I grew up. Lots of sports as a kid, playing outside, and really found that, you know, the Army was a great place to both grow and learn and just, you know, live with a group of professionals.
So let's talk about officer NCO dynamics and leader development in the Army. Sir, what is your perspective on the NCO and officer relationship currently?
Well, the Army definitely gets it right by pairing a non-commissioned officer with a commander at each echelon. And I witnessed that from my time at 2nd 325 with my first command, all the way through, like you described, where I am right now with Sergeant Major Alex Caprotti in the 4th Infantry Division in Fort Carson. Because commanders are ultimately responsible for everything the unit does or fails to do, but they have to have good counsel. They have to have advice. They have to have input from those who are really experienced in the lives of what our soldiers do and encounter every single day. And so my observation is, over time, I've grown more and more reliant and more comfortable taking input, suggestions, and advice from those non-commissioned officers, because I've seen the results of paying attention and listening to it.
Could you tell us, as a young officer, what really your first interaction was with an NCO?
Sure. I will tell you, it was a difficult one. As a second lieutenant, I had a sergeant first class who, unfortunately, was under a medical profile. And so he was not able to be with me as the platoon sergeant to provide counsel and advice and suggestions. And I felt like I was on my own quite a bit. Thankfully, one of my weapons squad leaders jumped in the breach and provided that input and the advice that I needed, because I would have been completely hopeless without somebody to kind of teach me what the Army was all about. This guy had 18 years of service. And you know, that's back in the day when you had a staff sergeant with 18 years. We don't often see that today. But that individual made a difference when I needed it and basically helped me understand the role and the relationship between a commissioned officer and a non-commissioned officer. What I found was I learned when I paid attention, when I listened. Now, I was responsible for the actions and the decisions, but I benefited greatly from hearing some thoughts, alternative ideas, some suggestions that were normally, you know, better approaches than what I came up with.
Sergeant Major, I'll turn it to you. What was your first interaction look like with a junior officer?
my first interaction was when I first became a brand new platoon sergeant. And I would tell you, it has evolved and it changes. But one of the things as an NCO you got to understand is, you know, a brand new platoon leader is trying to figure things out. This is his first opportunity to shine, you know. He is responsible for the first time for the lives of, you know, 30-plus people. And then helping them understand, you know, what your roles and responsibilities are first most, the most important thing I felt I had to do. And I found that very helpful really throughout. Understand what my commander's intent is, what does he see as his NCO? And it's going back to counseling. It's, you know, simplest forms. Sir, what do you need me to do? What is it that you envision your senior enlisted advisor or your first sergeant or platoon sergeant doing? I bring with a lot of experience, and that's just for the time in the Army, my operational experience. I know the formation because I was inside that formation just not many years ago. So I have that to get, but really is establishing trust through communication as and how I tackle all my relationships with commanders.
What would be the best way to get that relationship started? Building that trust. What can the officer do? What can the senior NCO do or the NCO do?
Well, Sergeant Major nailed it. If you don't do counseling, if you don't make it explicit, if you don't share with your non-commissioned officer that which you expect him or her to do, then you can't really be surprised when they're doing the things that they think are the most important because they've already had some experience. They already know, in essence, what they believe will be best for the unit. So you have to sit them down, talk to them, share with them, listen to them. And that formative counseling session has to happen pretty early because, you know, the deal, if you start on different azimuths, you may seem like you're close, but the further along you go, the further divergent you're going to get. So I've made a point of doing that. I didn't do it as a brand new lieutenant. I was a little bit intimidated, candidly. As a company commander, I did not initially counsel my first sergeant, and rapidly learned what a mistake that was. And so I definitely counseled my second first sergeant, and we had a much more productive relationship.
I'm going to pull a little bit from what you said. You know, it's as a young lieutenant, you were a little intimidated. And that happened to me. And as a, you know, Ranger Regiment platoon sergeant, you had a young PL coming in, and he's like, what am I going to teach this guy? And the first day, I was like, we're going to sit down, and you're going to tell me when you're going to counsel me. And I watched their eyes just open up, and they're like, yes, you are the platoon leader. You're in charge. I want to know what you expect from me. But and I would tell him, but sir, I'm going to tell you what I expect of you as well for this formation, because I've been in this formation for. We're gonna flourish as a command team, but we need to understand and what it is, what our duties and responsibilities are. So yeah, it's an NCO plays a large role in that, and you create back to creating the environment, you know, to thrive and excel. So that's how I did it with my PLs.
What's some of the most valuable insight that you've gotten from the NCO Corps, sir?
Well, I go back to Command Sergeant Major Jackie Love was my battalion Command Sergeant Major when I served in the 82nd Airborne Division as a battalion commander. And we started the day together and we finished the day together because he would go out and see things that I wouldn't otherwise see. He would go to places that would be difficult for me to get to without causing a disruption or causing, you know, a little bit of turbulence. And he would give me candid feedback and observations that would help me make better informed decisions. And because we did it at the beginning of each day and the end of each day, we knew where I needed to go or address change. And if things were on target and things were going smoothly, then I was able to kind of stay clear and just continue to run the staff and talk to commanders. But if he witnessed something or came across something that was a problem that needed to get solved, then I could convene the right authority or the right tools to kind of get engaged. And so what I learned from that was it's great if you have a great sergeant major who's out there doing good things. It's even better when that sergeant major comes back and ensures that the rest of the organization is informed and prepared to, in essence, you know, make adjustments if necessary. So that was really helpful.
And that's important for the NCOs as well, right? We talked about WIFM earlier. You know, it's important for that sergeant major to come back or that senior NCO to come back and because they're not there where the commander's at. And so how important is that, and what can the NCO receive from those conversations?
Yeah, so WIFM, what's in it for me, right? And the boss really kind of highlighted the importance of the NCO and really where he fits in training. We'll focus on training for this particular part. And it's, we train individuals, crews, and small teams. But most importantly, we come back and provide the feedback to the commander as to, hey, this is what we need to potentially focus. I know we thought we were here, but having spent time with this formation, I think we need to either slow things down or speed things up. So really understanding what it is that he wants to get, because he can only be in so many places, feeling empowered by him. And I've been very fortunate to have commanders that have empowered me to fill those gaps and speak in on their behalf. And a lot of it has to do with trust, and a lot of it has to do with the knowledge base that I have and the experience. And then that's how you kind of build teams, and you're able to kind of gather information to make the organization better.
And, oh, by the way, Command Sergeant Mary Caprati and I do the same thing. We start the day together before we go out to do PT, and before we break station, we reconvene, compare notes, and ensure that we're set for the next day.
Can you give us an example of when that that collaboration has yielded some good fruit?
Oh, absolutely. So Command Sergeant Mayor went out to one of our gunnery events that I was getting reports on and looking through and saying, oh, yeah, we're in pretty good shape. We got the right ammunition. We've been able to get to the right tables. Things are progressing. Sergeant Mayor was out there, said, hey, we are not getting our folks trained. They're getting to the Q levels, but they're not getting the sets and reps. And we were rushing through the process because he had been out there when I had been focused on something else, which gets to a point, it is a technique where the commander and command sergeant major or the commander and first sergeant go together to a lot of different things. I think there's a risk to that. When they're both in the same place, sometimes you're not able to get the same perspective because you're seeing it at the same time. Whereas if he's at a different place and I'm at a different place, when we compare notes, it's a little bit more powerful. So he gave me the feedback like, hey, we need to establish some retraining. We need to put a little bit more time on the calendar. And so I worked with the staff. I worked with the commander. We put a couple extra windows in, and they were able to go back and gain more proficiency that otherwise they might have missed. Otherwise, they might have checked the block and moved on for the next training objective.
Yeah, so feedback, the feedback loop, the feedback mechanism is key. And we spoke a little bit about it, because just one thing as a senior NCO, going and just seeing all those different things, right? And I was like, hey, it's great. I have the freedom to just get on my vehicle and just go check out training. It's awesome. But what are you doing with that? And it's coming back, working with a unit, understanding where they're lacking resources, where they're lacking the time, and then coming back and feeding that to the commander and say, hey, we may have missed this. But this is my recommendation on how we can potentially improve upon what I just saw. So that feedback mechanism has to exist. You have to be able to come back and kind of spell out, this is the problem, sir, and this is what we need to do to go about it.
Yeah, and the other thing Sergeant Major Caprati does, most of my really talented senior NCOs, that they sometimes work with the staff. So sometimes the feedback comes to the commander, which is entirely appropriate. But sometimes that feedback goes directly into the G3 or the S3 or the XO or, the staff proponent for an agency. So our major is cleared hot to go talk to our G4 if we have some issues with food service. He's cleared hot to talk to the G2 if he goes down to our IROC and sees things that are either going well or not going well, because he speaks for me. He's empowered to do that. And when that happens, it accelerates the ability for the organization to improve. It doesn't become this real bureaucratic lumbering process that has to filter everything up through one single human being. When he makes these recommendations and he talks to the staff members, they know that they can ignore it at their own peril, because eventually I'm going to tell them to do it. So they recognize that it's the best thing for the organization and it's the best thing for their section to kind of act upon that recommendation.
That's a great way for officers to empower their NCOs. But what's something that the NCOs can do, or maybe some from your perspective, sir, what's something the NCOs can do to get that empowerment from their commanders?
Yeah, the worst thing that I see is when a non-commissioned officer comes in a planning process at the very end and says, that plan's never going to work. Here's what you should have done. What would be much more helpful and what really works is when that non-commissioned officer is involved in the planning process to give his or her advice and counsel from the outset. And that experience can then influence the plan that gets developed and written. So I think that's where non-commissioned officers can play a huge role especially in big organizations, is being part of the planning process, working with the staff, jumping in before we start committing time and resources to a plan to make sure that it's going to pass muster, that it has common sense, that it's actually really going to be effective when that plan gets issued or that order gets issued. And the more we do that, the better our soldiers are, because they get to do things that make sense as opposed to just things that may look good on a PowerPoint slide.
Yeah, it's so if you look at the CSA's fourth focus area, professionalizing the force, so you as an NCO own that, right? It's and especially as you progress to the ranks, you have to, learning is a lifelong thing, right? That's what it's called, the profession of arms. You have to be willing to come in, and it gets harder as you go up. So you have to be value added. And that's one of the conversations we have as you fleet up the ranks. I was like, you're going to be exposed to concepts that just unfamiliar to you, but you have to become comfortable and understand them. And that takes time, that takes preparation, and you have to become versed in it. And that's how you build a trust when your commanders see, and that's some good feedback. I mean, hey, and that's how you continue to be value added to the organization and a voice at the table.
Sir, I wanted to know your perspective, or can you share a time in your career where collaboration between officers and NCOs led to a very successful outcome or mission accomplishment?
Oh, yeah. I had the privilege of serving as the commander of operations group at the Joint Readiness Training Center at then Fort Polk, now Fort Johnson, Louisiana. And the commander of the 2nd Brigade, 4th Infantry Division, I had no affiliation with the 4th Infantry Division at the time, was now, or soon to be, Brigadier General Dave Zinn. And he had this plan that he wanted to execute to get his brigade combat team postured to do an attack 3 days earlier than the order that he was given told him to execute. In fact, he was going to accept some risk in certain areas and just accelerate the process and get to the objective before he thought the enemy could. And so what he realized was the plan had to be disseminated rapidly, and it had to get into the hands of the soldiers who were going to execute it. So he, instead of going through what I would say is a traditional orders process where the brigade gathered all the battalion commanders and command sergeants major together and issued the order out, he basically got as many people as he could, especially non-commissioned officers, to join him for a hybrid order production slash rehearsal. It was very non-doctrinal. But it was so effective because it was the brigade commander speaking down to first sergeants and in some cases platoon sergeants saying, listen, we have got to use speed as our ally. If we wait, the enemy's going to mass and we're not going to be able to fight. We're going to basically hand the initiative over to them and we'll have to have this engagement on their terms. And those non-commissioned officers got the intent and then recognized what they had to do to make it work. And there was an order that came out, and they did try to synchronize all the different warfighting functions. They were doing combined arms maneuver. But because he had pulled those people in and communicated directly with them, they did the troop leading procedures steps in advance of the order being written, which is what you would expect to do. But it was done in such a way that it matched the commander's intent. And so what I watched, I was like, this is brilliant. This is absolutely brilliant. The manner in which we communicate with our non-commissioned officers matters. And their inclusion and their participation, not just in the orders production, like I described earlier, but the orders receipt can make things happen a lot more effectively. And that organization, they did a magnificent job. I really attribute it to his willingness to contribute to the understanding of the non-commissioned officers in his formation.
How important is that going to be in the future fight?
Well, if we're going to fight with mission command, mission orders, we're going to fight with denied, degraded communications where information is not always going to be available. There has to be a shared understanding, and it can't just be in the officer corps. I mean, that's ridiculous to think that the officer corps could manage mission style orders without having the non-commissioned officers involved. So I think that's going to be part of our communication strategy, and then it's really part of the training strategy. We have to have our non-commissioned officers feel very comfortable in exercising discipline initiative, understanding a purpose for a mission, and then producing that effect, even if they don't have, you know, a rigorous order to follow. That's going to be challenging, but it's part of why we train and educate, and we send our non-commissioned officers to professional military education. We don't need them to duplicate what our officer corps does, but we need them to be that enhancing component to the command team. Sergeant Major?
Yeah, that's right, sir. We briefly touched upon it, but really commander's intent, understanding, you know, what the mission orders are, and then translating that to the language our junior enlisted can understand, first and foremost, is, you know, one of our biggest reasons that we exist. And really the cooperation between NCO and officer, it goes beyond command teams. I will give you another example in how non-commissioned officers can enhance their formations is those relationships that you build outside of the immediate command team. So as a brigade CSM, making the time to build a relationship with those battalion commanders, with the division staff, pay significant dividends, you know, help them understand, because we all know a plan goes out and then you think you understand and then you go back and then you say, hey, read that back to me. Like, that's not what he said. So I found it very helpful to have conversations, you know, with echelons below. Hey, what did you understand with what the boss said? Oh, hey, show me. And that takes trust, and that takes time. It takes you engaging with them for other commanders to feel comfortable enough and come and say, hey, Sergeant Major, what do you think about this? And I was like, that's not what he said. I would approach it from this different way. And, you know, how about you go and ask him? And so that is the beauty of the NCO. He has the flexibility to move around and gather feedback from different people. But you have to be involved, and you have to make the time to do that.
Sir, that scenario that you described, it really reminded me of Kelly's Heroes. You know, the movie with
yeah, and they all recite it. They all know exactly what's going to happen. And then kind of the back brief is right there. It was maybe not that theatrical, but it was definitely effective. And I don't know that you could recreate that same set of circumstances in every operation, but it just talked to probably his relationship with those non-commissioned officers. Like, that was not the first time that they had seen him. That was not the first time they had interacted with him. And then his confidence that was the audience that needed to hear, because that would accelerate the entire process. He recognized that. I thought it was brilliant.
I think from a junior standpoint, it's important for me to see that the officer and enlisted counterpart are a team and that they support each other when each other is talking. I think that sometimes I've noticed that that's not the case, and it's caused distress maybe within our command teams. I wonder what you have to say.
Commander Sergeant Caprotti and I have had this discussion, because I did counsel him very early on, and there's one commander, and the Army is designed to enable commanders to make the decisions. They're ultimately responsible for everything that the unit does or fails to do. But the commander cannot make those decisions without having reliable communications and consistent interaction with that senior non-commissioned officer or non-commissioned officer, depending on what echelon you're working in. So I just find that I have no doubt that when I issue guidance or I give directives, that Command Sergeant Major Caprotti is going to help me execute those to the best of his ability. And if he sees something that needs to get modified or changed, he's going to come back and let me know. And I have communicated to my subordinates that he is empowered to make corrections on my behalf, so that we don't have to wait until word gets to me to get something fixed. He can do that. And that makes it much more effective for our entire team, because they recognize that we are speaking with one voice, that we communicate often enough that there's no deviation between our approaches, and we don't cause confusion, or we don't cause people to feel like there's, you know, two different ways of doing business. And so that has helped our formation. And I think what it does, at least from my perspective, it gives me confidence that we're able to do things in a much more productive way.
I'd like to talk about a less traditional relationship between officers and NCOs. When I was with the 11th Marine Expeditionary Unit in 2004, I worked for a young captain. We were in combat operations in Najaf against Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army. We had international media coming from everywhere. We embedded dozens of reporters with elements of a BLT or Battalion Landing Team, 1st Battalion, 4th Marines, and then also from units with the Army's 1st Cavalry Division, which had been sent in to support the 11th MEU. My captain was running herself ragged. She wasn't eating. She hardly slept. She wasn't doing anything to take care of herself. As a staff NCO, it was my responsibility to take care of my enlisted Marines, but it was also my responsibility to take care of my captain, my young officer. It's important to remember that we have to take care of each other. You have to establish trust, obviously. But she knew she could trust me to handle things, to share the burden with her. But the eyes of the world were on us at the time, and she didn't want to take our eyes off the ball for even a second. So she was very invested in everything we were doing, but, you know, she wasn't taking care of herself. So, you know, I stepped in. I brought her food. I literally pulled her fingers from her laptop, shut the lid, and urged her out of her chair and walked her over to her hooch so she could get some sleep. We were busy. But she, you know, if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to be able to get things done, or you might make mistakes. And then I took care of everything so that when she got back, you know, everything would be just as if she had been doing it. So I'm just kind of throwing that out as an illustration that there's all kinds of different relationships out there. Could you maybe talk a little bit about that?
The tendency for commanders to get, and I've watched this from different echelons where I've had subordinate commanders, to get completely focused on a mission, a requirement, a role that they have to play is fairly common. Commanders know that they know what their boss wants. They're going to focus on that. And sometimes they lose the bubble on those things that are supporting that effort and also necessary. And what I've witnessed, and kind of you described it in your story there, is non-commissioned officers tend to have a little bit broader perspective and can vector in when those things that are being ignored need attention. So if a commander is focused on one thing only, and he or she thinks this is the solution, if we get this one thing right, we're going to be successful. Well, the non-commissioned officer may see the two or three other things that have to happen first or have to happen to support that one thing. And I find that breadth of knowledge rather than the narrow focus is one of the things that makes the officer NCO relationship work really effectively. Because the goal isn't just to get the objective done. The goal is to be able to get the objective done and do the next thing and the thing after that and the thing after that. And sometimes, you know, our timelines where an officer knows he or she's going to be in a job for 2 years, the non-commissioned officer may be there for quite a while longer. They're the ones that can say, hey, listen, you may get this done, but you may cause the organization to collapse immediately upon completion of this thing that you think is so important. And so I've witnessed that the non-commissioned officer is the reminder of all those other things that have to be put into place for missions to truly be successful and, you know, keep the organization functioning in a meaningful way.
That's a great story. It made me think of one. I want to say it was 2002, 2003. We're in Ecuador. I was in Charlie Company 175, and we went to do some training with some of the indigenous forces there to get an understanding for jungle warfare, what it is to fight, you know. Fort Stewart didn't quite do it, so we needed to go to South America. That was the best place. But I had been there for a while and built these relationships, understood some of the fighters. I understand the challenges of fighting in that type of environment. And we had a mission to do, and it was a patrol through the jungle to an objective with a potential follow-on. Having spent a little bit of time there, you know, we sat and spoke to our guides and talked about the different challenges of moving, patrolling, and doing maneuvers inside of a triple canopy environment. But, you know, at the time, it's like, wait, we're going to move. We're going to get there by this time. And we watched our guides stop as the sun started to go down, pitch their tents, you know, hammocks above. And he's like, we're stopping. We'll see you. We'll catch up with you. That's all they said. And we're like, hey, we're going to push right through. And the order was to push right through and get through to a patrol base and stay there until first light and then begin the assault. And well, it didn't work. I think it took us roughly 2 hours to move, I think 100 or 200 meters. And we realized right then and there, I was like, wait, hey, sir, we talked about this. I mean, we have guys that told us we can't do this. And you know, the force was spent by the time we got done. Eventually, we fell asleep, you know, as best as we could. Didn't have time to put our tents up and, you know, get eaten alive throughout the night and woke up in time to make her head exhausted. There was no follow-on. So really taking the time to listen to the experience that the NCOs have because they've been exposed to this and they have the reps and sets underneath their belt will pay off for you. And sometimes, you know, and you need to be forceful enough. In this case, it didn't quite work out, but at the end, it was training, and it's better to do it in training than in combat.
Sir, as a final question, what advice would present-day you give to young Second Lieutenant Doyle back in the day?
That's a phenomenal. I think three things come to mind. Number one, persevere. You're going to face challenges. You're not always going to make the right call, but you're going to learn from your experiences. Speaking to somebody who went to Ranger School four times, took three times to get my EIB, two times a jump master, you have to be willing to kind of push on even when you fall short and take it as a growth opportunity. Learn. Don't be humiliated or embarrassed. I think I managed that, but it was very much a trial by fire. And I think I would counsel myself back then. It's like, hey, it's going to happen. Let it go. Don't worry about it. Just keep driving on. The second thing I would say certainly deals with the non-commissioned officers, and it's about engendering an environment where trust can actually exist. You have to be vulnerable. You have to share. You have to communicate. You have to interact. You're not going to be friends with every non-commissioned officer with whom you work, but you've got to have the respect and the trust that they have, you know, the best interest of the organization in mind, and you have to collaborate to be successful. And so I did eventually get to that point, like I described, you know, as I worked my way through my second first sergeant in the 82nd Airborne Division, but I probably missed some opportunities earlier on. And if I were to counsel Second Lieutenant Doyle, I'd say, hey, make that a focus area. Try to make sure that you give the NCO team the opportunity to work with you. Don't shy away. Don't be hesitant. Don't be scared of that degree of vulnerability, which I think is essential. And then the third thing, you know, I think I would continue, I tell this any second lieutenant, is have fun in your job. I mean, you're going to go out there and do great stuff. You're going to do incredible things. You're going to experience things that nobody else in our country gets to do, and you're doing it for a noble purpose. So don't miss the opportunity to enjoy it. Take advantage of those things that are once in a lifetime, and try to recognize those things, you know, store them up in your brain housing group and appreciate the awesome experiences that the Army affords you to work with great people, both officers and non-commissioned officers. So I think those would be the three things I would go back and thump Second Lieutenant Doyle in the head on, give him a little bit of advice.
Well, thank you, sir, for joining us.
Thank you. This was awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for more interesting guests and inspiring conversations right here at the NCO Journal. Submit your articles, get published. Don't forget to visit our webpage and follow us on social media. We'll see you next time on the Sergeant's Time Podcast.